picture many possibilities. So many buttons.
Technology.
Wireless things. Interesting. All right. Let's just take a moment to settle in. Find your meditation seat. Your posture, your back straight, and come into your body. Coming to the crown of your head and allowing your awareness to float down gently, slowly, releasing and relaxing all the tension. Behind your eyes, down to your jaw, come to the back of your neck, and float across your shoulders, down your arms, all the way to the tips of your fingers. Float down through your torso, around your shoulder blades, down to the small of your back, and all the way to your sit bones. Let your belly be soft as it rises and falls. Float down your legs, past your knees, all the way to the tips of your toes. Feel the places where your body touches the seat, the floor, your hands in your lap. Experience a sense of stability and feel safe here in this room, surrounded by your spiritual companions on the path. Completely safe. Grounded, well held in the arms of Mother Earth. Now allow your awareness to begin to rise up. And notice, as it rises up, how the spine straightens, your head. And connect there with the energy of the heavens. The Father energy is vast, limitless potential. Experience a sense of abundance, of contentment, thinking, I have enough. Now allow the Father energy to descend and the Mother energy to rise, and let it come together at your heart, taking the aspect of a small sphere of warm light, whose nature is love. Put your mind right inside that sphere of light and know that you are loved. And allow that love to grow and to fill your entire body with this radiating light. Light of loving kindness and compassion. And it is uncontainable. It begins to shine out through all of your pores in all directions. Filling the room. Building, the whole city. Out it goes until it fills the infinitude of space. Simply allow your imagination to go out and encompass all of space. Filling it with love, the wish for every single living being to have happiness and all the causes of happiness, to be free from suffering and all the causes of suffering, imagine actually touching people and giving them this happiness and freedom. People that you know. See them receiving the gift of happiness. Their problems solved, their illnesses healed. and allow your awareness to begin to contract back. Getting smaller and smaller, and dissolving all things into the true nature of reality as it becomes once again a small sphere of light. And watch it, your mind right there inside that light. Watch it get smaller and smaller until it becomes imperceivable. And you rest in luminous awareness, non-conceptuality. Simply aware. Letting appearances appear is nothing but the play of mind. If thoughts intrude, expand your mind once again out to fill all of space, letting thoughts go. And then, as you bring it back, look closely at this awareness. And then let it rest in its natural place. Whatever arises, let it be. Don't feed it or strangle. So from within this empty space, then with that wish to be of greatest benefit to all beings, you crystallize once again back into your bodhisattva body. Thank you. Fall is a time when it's really easy to see change. The leaves. It reminds me very much of change when I begin to see the leaves turn colors and begin to fall. And the truth of the matter is that things are changing. Moment by moment by moment, things are changing. The day moves on, becomes night, then morning, the week passes, our hair turns gray, the kids grow up and leave home, things are constantly changing, and the truth of the matter is that change is often stressful. So there's this kind of undercurrent trying to hold what is. Or change can also be good. Yeah? So what are some examples of good change?
Getting a new job.
Getting a new job.
Getting a good night's sleep.
A good night's sleep.
Letting go of something.
Letting go of something you're worried about or holding on to. Yeah. Financial stability. Yeah.
Growth.
When my children were growing up, their children go through these stages. And as a new mother, when you have your first child, then you think, oh my golly, look what this child is. Or, wow, isn't this a sweet child? So you think that the way they are manifesting in the moment is the way they are. Change, and they go through a period of great difficulty, writing on the walls, you know, incorrigibility, And then they turn into sweetness and light. And then they do something, you know. And it's like that. It's like that. And we tend to want to fix in the good times. We want to hold on to those good times. But pleasant thoughts arise, and we try to grasp it, and whoosh. It's gone. Circumstances change. So coming to grips with that change, what are the ways that we cope with change? How do we?
Study Dharma.
Study Dharma. Well, it's true, we study Dharma. Sometimes, we sit on our cushion, we've done everything right, we've followed all the instructions, and we sit down, and our mind is like a bee's nest. And we want to throttle the person that told us to do this. So what about in those times when it's really difficult to practice? Then what? Did you ever have those moments?
Yes. Yes.
What do you do?
I just had one. To recognize that the other person has needs and their feelings matter too. Recognizing that takes away from my own story and hearing the other person and being open. And when that happens, acceptance and better communication will happen. You can receive the gift that we offer each other.
Oh, that's good. That's practicing Dharma, isn't it? It is, because it's opening your heart. I think when we see how our hearts open, what happens when our heart is open to others, when we give to others, there's something in our own being that benefits from that. Is it true? I think it's when we hold on tight to our own idea of how we think things should be, how we want things to be. I mean, we want other people to be happy as well. We do want them to be happy. But circumstances are such that we can't make them happy. We just can't. Each one of us is responsible for our own happiness. We can create the conditions for happiness to arise. But that doesn't mean that happiness will come as a result of what we have done. So when we give, we must give without attachment, right? Not expecting something in return. Because if we expect something in return and we don't get it, then that gift, right, it's no longer really a practice of generosity. Because we have some expectation of receiving something in return. And I think that this undercurrent of change has the potential to be fabulous and also has the potential to be really scary. If you think that in every moment, whatever is arising is also dissolving, be rather alarming. And this is the fundamental suffering of suffering that the Lord Buddha taught. He said, "Life, there is suffering. There is suffering, mental and physical suffering. And there is the suffering of change. We don't get what we want, we get what we don't want, and we lose what we love." So the idea of being able to sit through all of these bees buzzing, to train ourselves to be able to be with what is arising is an important gift to ourselves. To ourselves. So I think there are many, many reasons why we fall away from practice, or we do a half-hearted practice. I'm guilty as well. But I do know that when I practice, I call it well, according to the prescription, then it benefits my mind, and it therefore benefits the people around me. So I wonder, we did a sit on Saturday. I wonder, does anybody have any questions about that, or does anybody have any questions about sitting in general, about meditation in general, or in particular?
So I've heard the instruction that if you're extremely dull in your meditation and you don't think you're going to be able to brighten your mind, it's just going to stay there for the duration of the meditation, then it's almost better to stop and get up and like go splash water in your face or something. And I never actually do that because I don't want to stop the meditation. Like, I have this chunk of time to meditate, and I don't want to stop it and go and do that and then come back. What do you think? Do you think it's, in your experience, do you think it's better to cut it off or to, like, sit and fight it? Like, I'm not going to fall asleep, but it's...
Did you ever try to get up?
Maybe when I first started meditating a long time ago, but... I mean, I'll stand up and meditate, but I don't stop meditation and go somewhere else. I don't remember doing it.
You might give it a go to see if it does have a positive effect.
Mm-hmm.
But do it mindfully. Do it saying, all right, now I'm so dull that I'm not able to be present fully with this meditation. So therefore, I'm going to go throw some cold water on my face, take a few deep breaths, step outside, look at the trees, and then come back. So it's not like you are not meditating, because you are mindfully going through the process of doing just exactly what you intend to do. And you're doing it thinking in terms of wanting to be able to meditate well. So that's the purpose. I'm doing this. I want to meditate. So if we just push through, when you're not present and you just push through, there's not that much benefit. You're not really changing your mind. You're saying the words, and of course there's a thread. You're keeping the thread.
Mm-hmm.
But what you really want to do is notice a change in your mind. Does that make sense? Do you want to do that? I mean, you don't want to because you think, oh, well, I've only got this much time, and if I take 5 minutes, then I don't have. But
yeah,
I think
that.
Yeah. Try it. Just try it and see. See what it does. The other thing is to make a really strong motivation. motivation when you sit down, knowing that you might have a tendency to be dull, then say, okay, I've got this, I've got 45 minutes here, I've got a half an hour here. Do I want to waste it? What am I going to do here? So you act, you'd be a cheerleader for yourself. And just remember, just tell yourself, look, you know, I've got my bags packed, you know, Yama's at the door. And that could happen at any time, and I might not have a chance to do this again. So I really, really, really want to do a good job. We get into, and I say we because I include myself, of getting into a habit, a routine, and prayers that we say, we might say a certain motivation and we say it every single day. Same thing over and over again, you know. May I attain perfect enlightenment in order to liberate every living being from the ocean of samsara suffering, place them in the bliss of perfect enlightenment, and for that purpose I'm going to do this meditation. And then just, I go for refuge and you just do it quickly. And there's no feeling in that. But if you stop and think about the suffering, the reason why. Think about your own suffering. Think about the suffering that other people are experiencing. Look at the people in your life who don't have any Dharma tools. And you do. So you want to grow them in order to be able to help others. Mm-hmm. So if you really change up your motivation and make it real, then it makes a big difference. Makes a big difference. Keep it fresh. And when you go in to your gompa, or to your meditation place, and you light a candle or you light some incense, look at, offer it to every holy object you have in your room. Looking at their faces and say, yes, I can and I will. There's some power in that, because there's an energy in those objects for you. You put them there for a reason. Each one has a meaning for you. So if we do that, they come alive for us. Particularly your lama. Just gratitude. And then when you sit, you want to be able to do a good job. Yeah? And the same thing is true for dedicating. When you sit and you're present and you're awake and aware, then at the end, congratulate yourself. Mm-hmm. Dedicate that good energy, the fact that you were present and you did a good job. Then dedicate that to doing that again. Mm-hmm. Being able to stay fully awake and aware. There are many objects of meditation that one can use. It's very common to use the breath as your meditation object. And when you begin your meditation, most beneficial to create a good posture and to completely relax. And from time to time in your meditation, to bring the mind back when you see that it has escaped. So we use introspection to check. We use mindfulness to bring the mind to the object and stay on the object. And introspection checks to see how we're doing. So we can be content to have just 10% of our mind on the object. So if you will, I invite you to begin to attend to your breath as it flows out and back in again. Attending to the sensation just at the tip of the nose or inside the nostrils, wherever your breath manifests most distinctly for you, in one point, right there, place the mind. Place the awareness right there. Notice how the sensation changes between the exhale and the inhale. If it is helpful, you can count the cycles of breath with out and back in as one, counting to 10, and then beginning again. Notice that there is nothing that you need do, that the body just breathes. give yourself permission to let go of whatever's arising, to let the sounds pass, to let the thoughts rise and fall. And you're just resting in your breath, breathing out and breathing in again, creating a peaceful stillness.
next week, and she'll be returning December 5th, Tuesday night here at 6:30. So we'll have another week of her before the year ends. Next Tuesday, Jay is going to be leading us in a gratitude circle. It will be sharing gratitude practices, discussion, practicing gratitude practices, and meditation.
And writing
gratitude practices. So it should be a really sweet way to follow up with a Thanksgiving holiday. And I think it would be a great one for you to bring your friends. So anyone who's been meaning to come to the center or isn't really sure, never been here before, it probably is a sweet way for them to start. After that, Lama Ami is going to be back in town, and she will be teaching on the 12th with Jay. They're going to be sharing Tibetan stories and some music, and so it's really fun just hearing some of the stories of the sages and the enlightened beings that have come before us. And then the following Tuesday, Jay is going to be sharing music with us. For the first part of the class, and then at the end we're going to be having a party. And so I think we should bring food, right? Like something fun to share. You know, it's going to be here, so something easy, if you can, and that would make it nice and more party-like, probably. So definitely come that night.
I'm trying to invite some more musicians, so there may be more music
there. Oh, cool. So Jay's going to play and perhaps some other musicians, so... It should be really fun, and it's a nice way, it's going to be our last class of the year, so it's a nice way to finish out the year and, you know, to spend some time together more casually. So we hope you're all able to make it to that. On Thursday nights, or is meditation on Monday nights or Thursday nights now?
Mondays.
So on Mondays, starting next week, there's going to be Tibetan Buddhist meditation, and they're working on the Four Immeasurables right now. And so they're going to be doing that through the end of the year. And then the following class is going to start in January, and they're going to be teaching, I think, Introduction to Buddhist Meditation, correct? Yeah. And then Sunil is starting an MBC Foundations course. It's 8 weeks. It's going to be on Thursdays, beginning November 30th, from 6:30 to 8:30. And I think that's all the announcements for events that are coming up for the rest of the year. Yeah. And then finally, we are an entire donation-based center. We pay our rent, we support our teachers, so they're able to come. And so there is two Donna Bowls in the back, one for the teacher to bring Elaine here, and then one to cover the cost of the space. So if you have any questions about that, feel free to ask me. Thank you.
Okay, you have a chance for questions. Got questions?
Comments?
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that at my job, sometimes I have very quiet days where I don't talk to anyone, and I just, you know, sit at my desk and very peaceful, and then some days where I'm getting a lot of phone calls and having a lot of meetings and interacting with a lot of people. And I've noticed that on days when I'm interacting more, my mind is way less settled during my meditations, and it's just like have not even bad agitation, it's just more agitated, right? So I was wondering if you had any advice for, I don't know, like protecting your mind from that, you know, getting stirred up. And like I said, it's not even always bad stuff. I just notice that on days when I get a lot of phone calls, my meditations are less settled.
Right. I think that's not controllable,
mm-hmm.
getting the phone calls or
mm-hmm.
having the conversations.
Mm-hmm.
What I can tell you what I find useful is that before I meditate, that I spend some time doing more quiet activity. So maybe I sit out on the deck, just listen to the birds. And doing something like that that is more settling. Have a nice cup of tea and just be quiet for a while before you actually go to your cushion.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a tendency to just subdue the mind. Yeah, Lama used to say we have to learn to meditate in the marketplace. But it's not easy. You know, it isn't easy. And it's okay if you find that you've got a lot going on in the mind, because there is a stillness. It is underneath all of that that's going on. It's like it's the riverbed and the water is rushing past. So you can get beneath that if you make a strong connection with the object and just be right there with it, stay with it, and let whatever's coming come and go. I did close the door next door. I asked them if I could close the door.
Open, open, open.
Yeah, I thought they were in the hall.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. But I found it was interesting because it didn't bother me. But I wondered if it bothered you. So that's what bothered me. I didn't want it to bother. I didn't want it to bother. But they said they opened the door because it was so hot in their room. Mm-hmm. So don't, there isn't their individual heat control in the different rooms. Anyway, they were happy to close the door.
No.
Because they had two doors. Yes, Neil.
So what you touched on earlier about developing the capacity to feel what's happening, you just said with different kinds of things, it's a big topic. It's like a life practice.
Yes.
There's so much that comes up around. One of the specific questions is anger is often seen in a negative way. I hear it negatively portrayed. So when there's anger, like today I was angry with my neighbor. That's what I do when I sit at home, I get angry with my neighbor. and I was doing my best to just sit there and feel it and be with it. Not back it out, but give it the space and a little bit of listening to it. You know, I just do my best and separate out what I say to him and how I interact with him from the anger itself. But I'm curious what the teachings say, because I often hear anger as being negative.
Primarily because anger disturbs your mind. Anything that disturbs your mind is a negative thought. So it could be even extreme desire, you know, as opposed to extreme hatred of that. So anything that takes you away from your center, away from peace, that's why it's negative. And also when we have anger, any strong emotion, we typically act it out. Either with words or body language. So then we create more of it. It continues to perpetuate. Lama Zopa Rinpoche once said, no amount of makeup can hide the ugly on an angry face. So when someone is angry, then there's a vibration around them. And you want to kind of step back. Be real careful. Say anything to set them off. So teachings say to transform that anger. How to transform that anger. So there are methods for transforming that anger. Thinking about your neighbor. So obviously he's doing something that's irritating you. So if you think about, does he know he's irritating? Does he do it on purpose? You have all these nonviolent communication skills. Is it possible to use them to mitigate the behavior? I don't know. But if it's not possible to change whatever it is, the situation is, then somehow to be able to look at it from a different standpoint. In the mind training, the seven points of mind training, the second line, well, no, it's actually maybe the fifth line. It says, when others out of jealousy or envy mistreat me, I will give the victory to them and take the defeat upon myself. And that's a tough one, to be able to give in to someone else. But if you are able, if it's not harmful, you know, if he's not doing something that's harmful and you can give him the victory, you may be able to actually completely transform the relationship. It's something to contemplate, you know, think about, is it possible? So really thinking about who's the enemy. And the enemy is in our mind. So it's working on the mind. Mm-hmm. Yes, Brian.
Okay. Slightly change the subject. Not really change the subject.
Okay, well first let's just see, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found some amateur writing to Shantideva about friend and foe.
Yes.
Which is very similar to what Anisi talks about the enemy image.
That's right.
And so wanting to practice with that.
If you think about friend, enemy, and stranger, you know, you can think about in your life, people that you know that have been your good friend, and then they do something, and now, you know, maybe not your friend anymore. I mean, this happens, particularly with very young people. I think about junior high school. Don't ever want to go back. You know? But enemies can also become friends. So what is it that causes an enemy or a stranger? So an enemy is one who has harmed you or someone you love. They become your enemy. And a friend is simply someone who's helped you or someone you love. And a stranger has neither helped nor harmed. And they have the potential to be either, simply because they've either helped or harmed. And if we see it like that, that people flow in and out of those categories, they are not inherently an enemy. Somebody loves them. Their mother, maybe. Their wife, their husband. So it's their children. They have friends. So they're not inherently an enemy. If they were, everyone would find them an enemy. So looking at it in that way is not, and the fact that the anger doesn't harm your neighbor. The anger harms you. So what you want to do is subdue that. And every time you allow anger to arise and you entertain it, then it comes again. But as you begin to subdue it and not allow it, there's something about anger that the I, the one that doesn't exist, really likes. Because you feel very strong, self-righteous. So it's a powerful energy. And yet it takes you away from peace of mind. You can't, when you're angry, you can't sit. You don't have that, you can't let it go. Because it's like a knot in your heart. So it's good to work on it. Ryan.
I have a few meditations that I do, and I've been playing with the order of them, like the traditional preliminaries, and then I've been working on loving kindness. Because I get anger a lot, and I heard that a lot of things go up for anger, so. And then shamatha. So I've been like kind of playing with the order that I do them in to see if it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Have you found something?
Yeah. I was wondering though, like, the meditation we did where you expand your mind today, expand your mind, and then bring it back. It seems very like the void or just like absent of emotion for me in that moment. I was like trying to concentrate and be present, but like the the loving kindness meditation is very like a very contrast of like lots of emotion and feeling. And I was using the loving kindness almost as a preliminary to maybe stable my mind more so for shamatha, but is it appropriate to have that type of emotion within like a stillness meditation?
Oh, sure, because it's very beautiful. When you send out love, it opens your heart. And so it's a peaceful place to be. So yes, for sure. Either way. Emptiness meditation, coming back to a place of emptiness, just awareness, luminous awareness, non-conceptuality, also has a peaceful aspect and can be quite blissful, just as loving kindness can be quite blissful in a state of one-pointedness, you know, right there with that. And this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to marinate our mind in loving kindness, compassion, and wisdom. So that's what arises all the time. So rather than getting angry, we actually have some compassion arising. Because someone who engenders anger in oneself is probably doing similar things and receiving similar results from other people. You know? So they're probably unhappy. They don't have a lot of friends, people who create that environment around them where they're always irritating other people. Then people back away from them. So I think that it's really important. It's very important to cultivate these states of mind that will free us. This is what freedom is, right? That's what nirvana is. It's freedom from negative states of mind. Geshe Lodin's quote that doesn't matter whether you live in a peaceful forest setting or a high-rise apartment in a big city, as long as you are under the control of karma and delusion, your address is samsara. So as long as we are controlled, then, you know, we cycle. And the mark of your practice, you will begin to see the mark of your practice is that, you know, these negative emotions just don't arise. Or if they do, they're quickly subdued. You begin to see, if you are consciously making an effort to subdue them, say, okay, I don't want to be in that place. And you have to do it. You just have to say, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to allow my mind to go there. I'm not going to say that what I'm thinking, that I want to say. And to think of the person's positive qualities. This is always helpful for me. When you're in a relationship with someone, it's not always going to be roses. Right? I mean, there's your children, your partners, your friends. When you're with other people, it's not always going to be perfect. And everybody's always saying nice things to you. Somebody might want to say, could we have a little talk? And it's like, no, I don't think so. So then you hear things that you don't want to hear. You hear how you're not perfect. And we all want to believe that we're perfect. Right? So when someone criticizes you, I tend to take it personally. I don't. Did I really say it like that? You know, if somebody says, "Well, I wish you wouldn't speak like that. It would be better for me." Even they're speaking nonviolent communication. You know, it would really be better for me if you would explain it like this. It's like, really? Do I really have to do that? You know. So, then instead of saying that, then think, that person really has a need. And sometimes I don't want to meet that need. I don't want to. But if I don't stop, if I don't give the victory up, then there's going to be sandpaper in the relationship until some time passes or until we have another conversation. But if I give it up, in a few days I'm going to forget about it anyway. I might even forget about it in an hour. But if I've given it up, if I've just said, it's okay. Yeah, I really do. I hear what you're saying, and I will try to do a better job. Instead of defending my position, because I have been challenged. Right? We want to be right, and we want people to see us in a good light. This is one of the 8 worldly concerns. Reputation, praise. We want that. But when you actually do give it up, you see, wow, there really wasn't any essence in that anyway. Who is it that's being harmed when someone criticizes you? Because from their side, they do see that you did something to harm them. They do see that you did something that they didn't like. But from your side, you didn't see any reason why they should see it that way. And you want to defend that. But if we say at that time, wow, it wasn't my intention to do like that, and so I'm really sorry. I'm going to try to say it in a different way, or try to do it in a different way next time, because I want you to be happy. Then it's finished. And you can go on about your happy day. But if you come back and push against it, then you're visiting it again and again and again and again, and it's going to come up again. And what happens in working in a Dharma relationship, if you have a partner who's also a Dharma practitioner, then you can help one another in your relationships. You can help one another. But certainly not by lecturing. Not by giving a little teaching. I know that's not. That doesn't work. So we do have to be careful. But giving the victory to others is a very useful technique. As long as you're not doing something that's creating harm.
So you mentioned infusing the shamatha practice with love or compassion or something like that. So how exactly do you do that? Because as you mentioned, shamatha is non-conceptual. So you're like carrying it over from before, or you're just kind of like taking a minute, like a pause and bringing it up or something?
It's really about beforehand, because once you begin to become one with your object and stay single-pointed on the object, whatever that object is. It can be loving kindness. That can be your object. Your object can be sending love. Breathing in peace, sending out love. You can do like that. But to do a shamatha practice, a loving kindness practice first, even just saying the 4 immeasurables with feeling, you see, that's the ticket. It's thinking about someone that you know who's really suffering. and really longing to give them peace, to give them freedom from pain, to give them a peaceful mind. You really long for that. And so you send that out, that love out, and see it actually, you know, surrounding them, coming into their heart, and watch them find a more peaceful place. And then at that time, you can rejoice in that. You have kind of some kind of appreciation for your love for that person. And that's what I mean by infusing it, because then your heart is open. And then you go, that's the point of your meditation. Then from that place, from the place of really wishing to be of benefit, then you go into, for this purpose, for this reason, I'm going to engage in this one-pointed concentration on whatever your object is. And then you go there. But your heart's already open. So you have a sense of peace and love already in your heart then. It stays. It just stays in a peaceful place.
Yeah, it makes me think. I've been doing 6 minutes. You know, like four, 6 minutes. So at each stop, I could like re-up the, mm-hmm. instead of just continuing right into the next,
mm-hmm.
I could take like a,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody else?
That's a question. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure how to ask this. Caring and really loving, let's say a loved one who is in pain and truly hurting, and there's wishes that, let's say, for example, I would have for them to see how beautiful they are, how wonderful, and so there's that unhappiness from the wanting of, how do I share this? How do I help this person see? I can't make that happen. I can just share. And so the difficulty of that is, how do I find I'm not sure what I'm looking for. Just to settle, the acceptance and the patience maybe.
Yes.
To watch someone that you love go through something very difficult.
Yes.
And sometimes you feel like, I feel like, oh my goodness, it's going to be a train wreck and I can't stop it.
That's right.
But then I can't.
That's
so
right.
I just try.
Right. Yeah. It's difficult. It's really difficult. All you can do is love them.
Yeah.
And share your feeling about who they are. For me, mm-hmm. what I see is this strength and this beauty and this quality, and I love you for that. This is what I see. I wish you could see it in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, there is a coming starting in January.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to share this with the group. Dr. Rick Hansen, who wrote Buddha's Brain and Just One Thing and Hardwiring Happiness, is a neuropsychologist. And he has a year-long program called The Foundations of Well-Being. And I took it 2 years ago. It's one night a week. I don't know which night it is. But it's one night a week. It's a podcast that lasts for an hour, I believe. So he speaks, and they have exercises, art, little assignments that you can do throughout the week. It's to build your inner resources, to build your inner strength, to build the beauty within. So I would suggest
I would love to get that.
And do it with them.
Yes.
You can just easy, Google Foundations of Well-Being. Or if you want, email me and I'll send you the link.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I have someone in my life that I hope will.
Because, you know, I am known to be impatient, and I'm learning but it's with difficulty.
Sure. Yes. Yes. The thing that's difficult is not to criticize where how they're manifesting. Mm-hmm. Not to criticize that, because that's one more notch in their belt.
Yeah.
You know, one more thing that they don't do right.
Well, for me, it's the impatience with me, not the other person.
Mm.
Like with resources, so I love that you said that, because you know, I recognize my limitation. I'm very new. I don't know really a lot about Buddhism outside of the one book that I purchased and attending Sunil's and Jay's, you know, NBC classes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's been great.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's more to this.
There's so much
so
more.
Excited.
Yes, one foot in front of the other. You know, somebody came to a teaching that I did in Reno last weekend before, and she came to the Friday night, and I was talking about Lam Rim, and she had intended to come for the whole weekend, but because she had never even heard the word Lam Rim, she didn't feel that she was qualified, and so she ended up not coming, even though I talked to her about it. Everybody has to hear it the first time. You know, we all start one foot. And then eventually, you know, you have a vast storehouse. Yeah. Okay, shall we sit? It's very useful when you are sitting to have the same object for a while. And it's good to start with the breath, simply because it's always with you. And it can always be used standing in line at the grocery store or at the red light. You can always drop into your breath. So I recommend using that. You can use the breath, the full body breathing, seeing how the breath manifests within the body, how the belly rises and falls, and the chest expands, and the shoulders lightly rise. You can watch that. Or you can fine-tune it and have it just at the tip of your nose. You can conjoin a word with the breath, such as breathing in peace and breathing out love. But just plain vanilla, watching the breath at the tip of the nose, to get used to that, is very useful. To follow the breath all the way to the end of the exhale, not actually watching as it goes, keeping the mind right there at the tip of the nose, but watching the sensation at the tip of the nose as it goes all the way to the end of the exhale. Notice when it turns to flow in. And then with curiosity, noticing when it comes to the top and turns to flow out. Like that, with a sense of wonder. loving kind wish to be of great benefit to every living being. It's so beautiful. So let's dedicate the energy we've created to actualizing the goal of perfect enlightenment, that all beings might be free. And may the bodhicitta that has grown in our heart continue to grow and never diminish. And where it has not yet arisen, may it arise and grow. May all our spiritual guides live long and fruitful lives. May those obstacles inside us or outside us that could stop us now stop and end forever. And if there's anyone in your life who needs special dedication, dedicate to their welfare. Maybe when I come in 2 weeks, we'll talk about the 8 verses of thought transformation. Is that a good plan? Mm-hmm. Hi, honey.
Thank you so much for bringing your joyful energy to Diamond Light. And I hope that you'll keep coming back because you've inspired a lot of us to keep going in the practice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll see you in 2 weeks. God willing, the creek don't rust.